issues.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Natalie Powell. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Show. How you doing? It's about 3 minutes after the hour. It's 3 minutes past the hour. I'm Richie Allen. Hope you had a great weekend. Live right now on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, my website, and multiple other platforms, as you know. Got a terrific week of programmes lined up for you on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Delighted to be with you, as usual.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Well, I've got two terrific writers lined up for you today. Tommy Sheridan, the former Glasgow City Councillor, former MSP, of course, writer and broadcaster, can be read at Sputnik News these days. Tommy joins the programme. And then we're live to Chicago. Stephen Lendman, stephenlendman.org, one of my oldest friends in the media. Wonderful man. We'll talk to Stephen. Well, basically, with Tommy and Stephen, we're going to round up the biggest news stories of today and the last few days, looking ahead to this week as well. Pretty packed old programme. You can tweet me as usual. My Twitter handle is at Richie Allen Show. It is Monday. It's the first show of a brand new week. Welcome to it. Thanks for listening to your Richie Allen Show. Yeah. And straight up, we're going to say welcome back to Jackie. I hadn't heard from Jackie for a while. Jackie's a long-time listener. She's been in Bali and beyond. Richie, I've been in Bali and beyond. Well, for some, Jackie. But she's back in Perth now and is looking forward to listening to the programme again. Thanks, Jackie. Nice to hear from you, by the way. And I hope to hear from you during the programme with your tweets and your comments as we go along. Where am I going to start today? By the way, the newspaper review show, 9:30, it's on YouTube now, it's on Podomatic, it's got nothing to do with the radio show. It's just me acting the clown, acting the idiot, as I read out some news stories in the early morning. It's a lot of nonsense, really, but it's a bit of fun, and it's got nothing to do with the radio show except I'm doing it, if that makes any sense. All right. So the Foreign Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, has been in Europe meeting European Union foreign ministers, where they've been worrying themselves about Iran and about Iran breaching some of its commitments. This is the nuclear deal, which the US withdrew from last year and then put more sanctions on Iran. So the former, he might be the former foreign secretary in a week or so's time, but he's the former, excuse me, why can't I separate former and foreign? Must be a Freudian slip. Anyway, the foreign secretary, Jeremy Hunt, in that meeting came out of it and said that there is a small window whereby the Iran nuclear deal can be saved. Yeah, Jeremy Hunt, very briefly speaking to the assembled media.
We are looking to find a way to preserve the nuclear deal, which we think is the best way of keeping the Middle East as a whole nuclear weapon free. Iran is still a good year away from developing a nuclear weapon. We think there is still some closing but small window to keep the deal alive.
Yeah. You know, in the immortal words of the great Gerald Celente, and I'll paraphrase the great man, who the hell do these people think they are telling other countries what they can and can't do? Come on! Iran hasn't attacked anybody in centuries and centuries and centuries. Come on! The cheek of these people, these little jumped up little Hitlers. You'll never have a nuclear weapon. It's a sovereign country. If it wants one, let it have one. Plenty of other countries have them. Let's all have them. Let's all have them. Why not? Madness. Good morning. Good evening. You see, it must be Monday. Hi to Anonymous in Western Massachusetts, to Charlotte Bins, Adam Charlotte, to Bass Ninja, who's listening live. Ordinarily gets the podcast. Hi to Gail. Did you see that story that I tweeted yesterday about the woman who was confronted by a man in a gimp suit? Did you see that? It's been all over the news. There are even updates on it today. There is a nationwide manhunt for a man. I swear to Jesus, for a man in a gimp suit. Honest to God, you couldn't make it up. A woman got out of a car yesterday and a guy was running at her in a gimp suit. A gimp as in the gimp, you know? Remember the gimp,
Well.
Pulp Fiction.
Bring out the gimp. I think the gimp's sleeping. Well, I guess you just have to go wake him up now,
yeah,
don't you?
But the gimp is not sleeping. The gimp has apparently escaped and is running at women. Great story on bbc.co.uk yesterday. So Donald Trump then has been criticised by Theresa May. She's very brave now, Theresa, as her time is about up. And this is over Trump calling on several Democratic congresswomen to go home. And these have been described as congresswomen of colour. The outgoing Prime Minister said Trump's words were completely unacceptable. There you are. Trump said the women originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe. And he was referring to four women. Three of them were born in the United States. And one of them came as a refugee. Trump's a moron, we know that. These remarks have been condemned today as racist and as having gone beyond things he said in the past. Things that drew allegations of racism in the past. Apparently today he's proved that he's a racist. Are you a racist now, Father, are you? Anyway, prospective Democratic presidential candidates like Bernie Sanders denounced Trump as racist and divisive. Despite that criticism, Trump went straight back to his Twitter and launched another Twitter tirade, calling on the women to apologise to him. The women, by the way, are Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Ayanna Pressley, not to mention Ilhan Omar. She came to the US as a refugee from Somalia. Parents are Palestinians, I believe. Could be wrong, though. Not following it that closely, it is amusing. I've given my explanation as to these, what's happening here. So anyway, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was only born a few miles away from where Donald Trump was born. She was born in the Bronx in New York. And in the last hour, would you believe it, Sky News caught up with her as she was, well, about to go to work. This is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking with Sky News reporters or reporter about 45 minutes ago. Have a listen.
Congresswoman, good morning. What would you like to say to the president today?
You big feckin' idiot. That's what I'd like to say to him. But of course she didn't say that.
Well, I mean, I think it's unfortunate that he feels the way he feels about people of color in this country. It's unfortunate the way he feels about immigrants, naturalized citizens or not, in this country. But I think what I would tell him is that it's time to move on from him, and it's time to move on from his conception of an America that we have tried to move past for a long time.
As you say, race relations, a deep issue in this country. This is a deliberate move from the leader of this country.
Absolutely, it is. And that is because he relies on racism, division, and anti-immigrant sentiment to consolidate power because he does not have a positive vision for the future of America. This president does not believe in an America where healthcare is a right. He does not believe in an America that offers a dignified education to all people, regardless of income. He doesn't believe in a prosperous future for our country. He believes that everything is a threat. And I just don't think from a leadership perspective, that's a strong place to operate from.
Is there a strategy behind the racism to demonize you, to raise your profile?
Well, I think there's a strategy to divide the country, because the more this country is divided, the more he benefits from it.
Yeah. So there, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking with Sky a bit earlier on. It was a pile-in on Donald Trump, who is a complete arse, let's be honest about it. There's no defending the man. Sholat Moss Shogbamimu is a lawyer. Sholat Moss Shogbamimu, she sometimes appears on Sky News. She's a black lawyer and activist, and she's not happy with Donald Trump either.
Trump's tweets against the congresswomen are brazenly racist and rooted in white supremacy hatred, and bigotry. These are American citizens who, because of the color of their skin and their ethnicity, Trump is treating as inferior and telling them to go back where they came from. His behavior is not only unacceptable, it's abhorrent. It is an outright abuse of office, and he's using the power of that office to promote and incite racism and hatred. Look, without a shadow of a doubt, Donald Trump is a racist, is a xenophobic, racist bigot. And I'm going to be very clear about that. If there's
I think she's been fairly clear about it so far, hasn't she?
If there's anybody, if it was anybody else in a position of power, they would have been forced to apologize at the very minimum, right? Or immediately terminated from office. We have to bear in mind that this man is wielding power and influence.
Okay. And that's how it went pretty much all day long. We might get into some of this with Steve and maybe with Tommy as well. Here's a very important story today. Children and fake news. Children in primary schools and secondary schools will start to learn about fake news from 2020, according to the government today. The Education Secretary Damien Hines says teachers need to explain to children about the dangers of fake news and disinformation. I know. I can't keep the smile out of my voice. This is a politician talking about explaining about fake news to somebody, you know. It's lovely. The Department for Education has published online safety guidance for schools, which includes teaching children how to identify online risks and how and when to seek support. They just won't leave children alone, will they? Terrifying children. It also gives guidelines on how to recognise and respond to fake news and all the rest of it. Anyway, Damien Hines, the Education Secretary, was on media duty this morning. He spoke to everybody. Bit of a Sky News fest today. He spoke with Sky's Sarah Jane Mee earlier on. Damien Hines, the Education Secretary, with Sarah Jane Mee on fake news.
Let's talk about fake news then. It's hard enough for some adults to spot fake news when they're online. Yeah. How are you equipping children to spot it?
Yeah, you're dead right. It is quite hard to spot sometimes. So this is part of what we're doing in an overall effort to make sure that children are equipped and are protected in the online world. It's part of our approach on relationships education, but also actually merges with the computing curriculum to make sure that children don't just understand what's at the surface in the online world, but also understand how it works, why somebody might be trying to mislead them, and the sort of techniques that they can use to do that.
At what age will children start to learn about fake news? Because I suppose the problem is that children are going online younger and younger now, aren't they? So what's the appropriate age to start learning about this kind of thing?
So our curriculum covering online harms and protection of young children, I mean, starts in primary school. The exact time will be different according to in different schools.
He's ducking the question. She's asked them specifically, how old will the children be when this is inflicted on them? And he's ignoring the question, and she's letting him away with it. She's normally not bad, Sarah Jane Mee. She's normally not bad. She's not as bad as some of the others, but she's letting him away with it. I'd have nailed him on this point. When do you want to start talking to children about fake news? And I would have buried him until he gave me an answer.
Schools, according to what's right for those kids, but yeah, you're
that doesn't mean anything. Schools, we'll leave it to schools, and schools will decide when it's right for those kids. That's not an answer.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, kids are going online earlier, and so it's right that they're protected and they're sort of forewarned earlier. But this is, and it's part of a broader, much broader package about understanding some of the risks, as well as, of course, the great opportunities there are with technology.
Yeah, that's Damien Hines, the Education Secretary. What about the role social media companies themselves must play?
Yeah, so you're quite right. The social media companies, and indeed other technology and new media companies, are absolutely at the heart of this. And in fact, we've got a session later today. Myself and Matt Hancock, the Health Secretary, and other ministers have a session later today with the social media companies, talking about their responsibilities and how we can work together, because actually it should be a joint effort to stop the spread of disinformation and misinformation. That is incredibly important. They have a big responsibility in that.
Yeah, they have a big responsibility. And what nobody wants to ask him, no reporter is asking the question, who or what gets to decide what is true and what isn't true? Who or what gets to decide what is potentially harmful and what isn't? This is crazy. And we'll finish with Damien Hines. She asked him, did Sarah Jane Mee, about the protests in Birmingham where Asian parents, mostly Muslims, object to their four-year-olds being taught about same-sex relationships and gender identity, etc., etc.
As part of the new relationships curriculum, there's still been a lot of focus up in Birmingham, and you know where I'm going with this because yes. we've spoken about this on Sunrise before. The school that's at the centre of protests about same-sex education in schools as part of that curriculum. These protests are still ongoing. I just wonder, do you feel that you've been absolutely clear with these parents that there should be no veto on these classes, that it's intolerant to oppose them because this protest, this row is still going on in the Midlands?
So, yes, Sarah-Jane, totally clear, and I'm going to be very clear again. We want dialogue, we want consultation, but that does not constitute a veto on what gets taught at school. What I absolutely do not want is protests outside schools. No child should have to walk past a protest to go to school. It can.
Why not? In case they learn that as private citizens, they have the right to protest and they have the right to assemble, maybe. Don't let them think that. So he goes on to say that it's a big scary thing for the children and it's a big scary thing for the teachers. What nonsense. What poppycock. Poppycock. It's 19 minutes past the hour. Before we get Tommy Sheridan on the line, I'm looking forward to catching up with Tommy again. Let me say hello to Liz Jones. How you doing, Liz? Thanks to Charlotte for the clip of Billy Joel, the concert, where Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton were booed unmercifully. Unmercifully. By the audience there, good stuff. I defy Faisal, who tweets, everything Cortez is accusing Trump of, while containing some truth, is doubly true of her own party. Remember Obama's crackdown on immigrants, says Faisal. Good stuff, Faisal. I to Mark Best. How you doing, Mark? The Gimp may be under the influence of the full moon, just a theory, says Mark. Who goes on to say, the truth is out there somewhere, and Damien knows exactly what it is. What a godlike genius he must be. Base Ninja says, if Trump goes back to where he's from, do you think it'll be to one of the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, possibly even Maggie T, Reagan, or would Beelzebub welcome him home, says Base Ninja. Thank you. Taking a pretty dim view there of Donald Trump. I fancy a bit of Bon Jovi. Bit of Bon Jovi on the Richie Allen Show. It's Monday. It is the 15th of July, 2019. Right, Bon Jovi on the Richie Allen Show. It's My Life. The time is 21 and a half minutes past the hour. Let's welcome back to the programme my first guest today. Love having him on. He's a writer, a broadcaster, a former Glasgow City Councillor, and of course, a former MSP. He's a socialist, and you can read him in many places, but if you go to sputniknews.com, you'll find his excellent, thought-provoking, provocative, and educational articles. Let's welcome back to the show our own Tommy Sheridan. Tommy, welcome back. How are you?
I'm fine, Richie. Thank you for such a warm and very comradely introduction. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, mate. You deserve it. Listen, before we talk about the Labour Party and anti-Semitism and Scottish independence and Donald Trump and all the rest of it, last week there was a two-day conference in London involving the UK government. It was the Global Conference for Media Freedom, and inexplicably, and this affects you, of course, Sputnik News and RT were left standing outside in the cold. That's beyond irony when a media conference talking about press freedom excludes two reputable and professional news networks. What's going on, Tommy?
Richie, not only is it beyond irony, but the hypocrisy of the BBC was summed up when they welcomed the exclusion. They welcomed the exclusion. I mean, it just defies logic. You know, people talk about, oh, North Korea, you can't believe anything from North Korea because it's state-controlled media. Yeah. You have to look closer at home, Richie. The BBC is completely and utterly the British Bias Corporation. It stands for and in defence of the British establishment, and they should be ashamed of the way they defended the exclusion of RT and Sputnik. RT and Sputnik can be criticised by all and sundry. There's no problem with that. But all you have to do is consult the Sputnik website and you will see left-wing views like mine. But unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned, you'll see a lot of right-wing views as well. Now, that's what websites are about. It's about all the views and all of the various wings of opinion being heard, some of which I completely and utterly am repulsed by. But for goodness sakes, surely that's what freedom of a speech is about, as long as it's not offensive, as long as it's not breaking the law. But there are columnists employed to write articles for Sputnik whom I have got absolutely no political allegiance with. And they've got no allegiance with me. But Sputnik gives air and space to all of those views. And that's why the idea of it being excluded last week from a global media freedom conference just took the biscuit.
Yeah, I can't add anything to that. And to compound all of that, these same cheerleaders for the exclusion of Sputnik and RT are singing dumb on the plight of Julian Assange, which is shocking, that a man who put information into the public domain that was more than in the public interest is looking like he's going to be extradited to the United States. And again, singing dumb, nothing from the Beeb, nothing from Channel 4 News. Well, maybe a little bit from Channel 4 News, but broadly speaking, Tommy, nothing.
It's horrific, quite frankly, Richie. I don't think anyone has the right to call themselves a journalist if they're not prepared to defend Julian Assange. Julian Assange has been completely and utterly set up. He is someone who discovered wrongdoing at the highest echelons of power and let everyone know about it. He did what the rest of us talk about. He spoke truth to power. That's what journalists are supposed to do. And the way he's been treated by his fellow professionals is a disgrace. I think a lot of it, quite frankly, Richie, not only is it ignorance, I think a lot of it's jealousy. Jealousy that these so-called highfalutin journalists will never, ever be able to get anything like the scoops that Julian Assange was able to get, and have got nothing like the bravery that he had in actually exposing those scoops.
Yeah, and you look at people like Robert Fisk, who I've known for years. I've had him on programmes going back years. John Pilger, whom I've never interviewed. Many of them, and you wonder, when they're gone, Tommy, I know you're doing your best on Sputnik News, and there are others like you, and I'm not kissing your arse. You're a really good writer. You've got a really good understanding of a brief. But, you know, The Telegraph is not saying, or The Guardian is not saying, hey, Tommy, I like that. Can I republish it or reprint it? So what are we going to do when Pilger and Fisk and these people are gone?
Do you know, it's a frightening prospect, Richie. I recently had a wee holiday, and one of the books that I took on holiday was called Propaganda Blitz, How the Corporate Media Distort Reality. It was written by the Media Lens guys, David Edwards and David Cromwell. And please, if your listeners read no other book this year, please go and get it. Read it, Propaganda Blitz. It is absolutely stunning, well-researched. And do you know what it exposes, Richie? This is what I love about it. We know, you know, where the Sun's coming from and where the Mail is coming from and where the Telegraph's coming from. What this book does is it exposes the so-called liberal media. It exposes the Guardian and the Channel 4 and the BBC. It exposes them for the complete and utter slavish arrangement with the corporations that run society and sticking up for the ruling classes. And if anybody wants to understand the way the world works and how the media works, please get your hand in this book. Absolutely brilliant, riveting stuff.
Well, I'm going to make a note of it now and get it, Tommy, on that recommendation. I will indeed. I'm looking for something to read at the moment, actually. Tommy Sheridan is a good Tommy. Yeah, check it out.
You'll love it, mate. Propaganda Blitz. It's different chapters on different stories. You know, once you read this, then you'll understand exactly what happened in Libya and the rule of Clinton and the rule of the BBC. You'll understand exactly Iraq. You'll understand exactly what's happening in relation to the attack in Corbyn. It takes up people like Julian Assange, takes up people like Grant and others that have been absolutely assaulted by these people. So Chavez, Venezuela, it is fantastic.
Yeah, good stuff, Tommy. Tommy Sheridan is our guest this hour, writer, broadcaster, Glasgow City Councillor, former member of the Scottish Parliament, of course, socialist. Tommy is with us. And thanks for the tweets. Lots of tweets on this already. You can follow Tommy on Twitter, @CitizenTommy, if you're not following him already. I've been around a bit, Tommy. Started off in Waterford City in Ireland, and I've worked pretty much at every level of the media. I've made mistakes. I've not always been right. There are times when I was a bit, you know, when I left myself down, I could have done a bit better. But I learned over the years. What I've never done is what I think the BBC did last Wednesday night. I think they knowingly put some commentators on or some interviewees on who have a relationship with the Israeli embassy in London. One or two people who appeared in the brilliant Al Jazeera expose of the Israeli lobby in the UK, which was called The Lobby, an amazing bit of journalism by Al Jazeera. And one or two of the people in that who were working in and around people like Joan Ryan appeared in the propaganda report last Wednesday. And I can't help wondering, and I know Gilad Atzmon, and I know Gilad is like Marmite. Gilad, he sees himself as a former Jewish guy within the IDF, born in Israel, Gilad, very much a Palestinian, pro-Palestinian activist now. Some Jewish people think he's anti-Semitic and he's a self-hating Jew. That's their business, whatever. But Gilad has interviewed a guy who's been a 35-year producer at the BBC, and the guy himself said he couldn't believe it, that the BBC would put people on the air to say that anti-Semitism was rampant in the Labour Party and that Jeremy Corbyn's office was trying to shut down the investigation. And some of the people were actually exposed in the Al Jazeera scoop of a year and a half or 2 years ago. Hit piece, Tommy, this panorama. I mean, your own piece on it in Sputnik News is excellent. What have you made of all of this?
Richie, I found it stomach-churning, mate. It was quite, frankly, one of the worst hatchet jobs I've ever seen. I mean, let's wind back here to a couple of years ago and the Labour Party leadership campaign and the Panorama documentary that was done by John Ware, former Sun journalist. Now, that was supposed to be about all of the candidates. It turned out to be a complete and utter hatchet job on Corbyn. It was issued 3 days before the ballots were finally returned in that election, so it could have influenced that election, and it was meant to turn everyone against Corbyn. Every single piece of filth that they possibly could get their hands on was thrown at Corbyn. The Labour Party Corbyn campaign complained officially to the BBC. There were several hundred complaints that were submitted to the BBC. 2 years after it, 2 years after it, they commissioned the same guy to present another show about Corbyn. I mean, it beggars belief, Richie, that this type of thing is happening. And by the way, you and I are paying for it. This is a public broadcast. If this was an ITN show, Channel 4 show, then, you know, they can do what they want. They're commercially funded. But this was a public broadcaster being used to assassinate the opposition, verbally assassinate the opposition in the country. Now, if that was happening in any other part of the world, we would all be on our hind legs saying, this is a disgrace, this shows there isn't any freedom in the media. And it happens in our own backyard with the BBC. It was a shameful piece of journalism.
When I started at WLRFM in Waterford back in the late 90s, one of the things they said to me was, repeatedly banged into my head, because I was so inexperienced, I didn't present the talk show. I did music shows, but they allowed me to report for the talk show as I was learning. And they said to me, when somebody makes a claim about anything, Richie, ask them for evidence. Your job is done then. Just ask them. That's your bloody job. Ask them. Because when you start out, you're green, Tommy. And my early interviews were absolutely diabolical. People would say stuff and I wouldn't challenge them because I didn't know any better. I was nervous. You know, now it's like, come on, you got to offer me some evidence. And if you made a claim about somebody or something, much as I like you and I like reading, I say, right, Tommy, evidence. And you would either give it to me or you wouldn't give it to me. These people were making pretty awful accusations about people. And not once did Mayer say, did he? Not once did he say, is there any evidence there?
Richard, I highlighted in my own piece. You know,
yours is brilliant, that piece.
But I highlighted in my own piece. The one woman who really, really took the biscuit as far as I was concerned. Firstly, because she says she joined the Labour Party because of Jeremy Corbyn in 2016. She then says, every single day, and I'm not making up, this is what she says, this is verbatim, every single day I suffered anti-Semitism, and she says that people were saying Hitler didn't go far enough.
Yeah.
Hitler was great. No, I mean, come on. Are we supposed to swallow this? That people in the Labour Party, are supporting Hitler? Come on. It is absolute garbage. And then to cap it all off, this very woman who says she suffered anti-Semitism every single day 3 years ago then says, oh, it's now no longer a safe place for Jews to be. Well, why did you not conclude that after a week?
Yeah,
if you covered it every day, why would you wait 3 bloody years to conclude that? It was garbage. Absolute garbage.
You're a journalist, you see. You would have said to her, you know, you don't have to be rude, you don't have to be aggressive. You would have said, I would have said, well, why didn't you leave? Why didn't you report it?
Exactly.
The actress Tracy Ann Oberman, who's Jewish, mostly remembered, I think, for playing Chrissy in EastEnders. I'm ashamed that I know that, but I used to watch EastEnders. At one time, I used to watch it. And she's an actress. Seen her being interviewed before on Loose Women and stuff. Seems like a pleasant woman. She was on with Victoria Derbyshire earlier today, and she said that she was at a party, and another actor came up to her and was shouting at her and was spitting at her and saying to her, your lot want to bring Jeremy Corbyn down. Now, I wouldn't dream of saying that Tracy Oberman is not telling the truth. That would be unfair. I certainly don't know that, and we should take people at their word. But again, Victoria just sat there. Tracy, did you phone the police? Because that's rotten, that. If somebody is saying stuff like that. It seems like the Beeb is just allowing this kind of avalanche of stuff and not saying, well, come on, let's have a bit of balance here. And it is wretched. And here's the question, Tommy, I've asked you before. Why is Jeremy not standing up to this? Why is he not coming after us?
Do you know, I have spoken to... I'm not in the Labour Party, so therefore I'm not an apologist for the Labour Party. I am a socialist, and I'll be a socialist to my dying breath, and I'm prepared to stand up for a socialist. And I think Jeremy is a socialist. I disagree with him on independence in Scotland, and that's what that will prevent me from voting Labour in Scotland. I'll vote for an independent-supporting party. But when someone is under as much assault as Jeremy is under, quite frankly, I think you commit the most grievous of crimes in that you let evil triumph when good people stay silent. That was, to paraphrase Martin Luther King's point of view, that the way evil triumphs is when good people stay silent in the face of evil. And it is absolute evil to allow these... Now, these are offensive claims. This isn't somebody who's getting told that he is a tree-hugger. This isn't somebody getting told that he's a muesli eater. This isn't somebody getting told that he's a Jesus sandals wearer. These are the wee sort of slights on somebody's character that don't mean anything. The guy's getting called an anti-Semite. This is a guy that's fought racism and anti-Semitism all his life. This is a guy who's been on the barricades fighting against the fascists. And to be called anti-Semitic is offensive to this man. And for these people to get away with this phrase, which I've seen getting repeated and repeated and repeated, the Labour Party is institutionally racist, institutionally racist. If you look at every YouGov poll that's been done on the question of racism, of anti-Semitism, it is as clear as the nose in my face. And that is that there is less anti-Semitism in the Labour Party than there is in society as a whole, and there's less anti-Semitism in the Labour Party than there is in the Tory Party. That's where you find more anti-Semitism. So this is a manufactured crisis, a manufactured story, and for my tuppence worth, Richie, this is because the British establishment are frightened, A, domestically, that Jeremy Corbyn becomes Prime Minister, because then the rich will have to start paying their bloody taxes, and B, internationally, that Jeremy Corbyn becomes Prime Minister, because then he will adopt a much more friendly line to the rights of the Palestinian people, and he will not kowtow to the racism that is taking place in Israel just now, and the racist apartheid policies that Israel's getting away with just now. That is what frightens the establishment, not just in Britain, but internationally. To me, that's what these attacks are all about. But can I just add a wee rider to that?
Go ahead, mate.
And that is this. It never stopped Jeremy Corbyn being elected in 2016 when John Ware did his last hatchet job using Panorama to do it. Then when he faced a re-election campaign, he won a bigger majority than he had before. And then when he stood in 2017, and every single, this is dead important, that this comes from Propaganda Blitz, please read it for this, every single so-called liberal columnist and pundit predicted that Corbyn was finished at the general election of 2017. They were all laughing into their gins and tonics as they were predicting the annihilation of the Labour Party. Corbyn got the biggest increase in the Labour vote since 1945. A 10% swing to Labour. Biggest increase since 1945. Those so-called pundits should have the next day submitted their P45s because they were out of touch with people's opinions. They said that everybody was going to annihilate Corbyn. They were wrong. And I've got a prediction here. They can throw all of this muck to him. But when you look at the BBC coverage of the Scout Convention in London at the weekend, and the youngsters are breaking sporadically into old Jeremy Corbyn songs, when you look at the turnout at the Miners' Gala, when you look at the response at the big music festivals to Corbyn, young people don't get their news from the manufactured sources any longer. They get their news from the internet, they get their news from independent sources, and they're not buying the claptrap against Corbyn. That's what frightens the establishment. That doesn't matter what they throw at him, he is still popular. And the most recent poll, just the other day, Richie, saw Labour going from 26 to 29%. They've opened a 6% lead on the Tories. That's why they attack him.
Very interesting that, especially about the youngsters, because Damien Hines wants to go after children in primary schools to teach them about fake news. Namely, don't go reading Sputnik News and Tommy Sheridan, that's fake news. This is serious stuff. We could get into that another time. Yeah, he did say that Labour would recognise the state of Palestine. Let me be the devil's advocate just for a second. Let's finish on this particular subject. I want to talk to you about the lunacy of the Trump administration. Before we do that, let me be fair here, because I've got Jewish pals, you've got Jewish pals. I've not got many. I'm not going to virtue signal. I've not got many. I've got one or two. And sometimes they say to me, Richie, you're so anti the state of Israel, which I am. I make no bones about that. They say you're blind, Richie. There are people in society who have always blamed the Jews for everything. And some of these people were emboldened, Richie, whether you like it or not, when Jeremy got in as leader. Not Jeremy's fault, because as you said, he's always been anti-racist, but he's always had the courage to take an active stance for the rights of the Palestinians. He always has. So one or two Jewish folks have always said to me, Richie, there were some real idiots now emboldened by Jeremy's success, and they have come out of the woodwork. They're not like you. They're not vehemently anti-Israel, which I am. They're genuinely Jew blamers. They blame Jews for everything. And to say that it's not happening in the Labour Party is, you're blind. Now, what do you think, before we move on?
The problem with those accusations, Richie, is quite simple. It goes right back to the way you started the show.
Yeah.
If we don't have evidence and arguments, then quite frankly, what we've got is human bodies without bones. And as soon as they move, they collapse. It's a bit like an argument like anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. This is a party of 500,000 members. The number of complaints is at less than 0.1% of the membership.
Yeah.
When people like your friends make this point, I think you've got to say to them, listen, anti-Semitism is an absolute scathing problem in society that has to be dealt with. But it has to be dealt with across the whole of society. And to start in the Labour Party is to start at the wrong place. Because the Labour Party's got less anti-Semitism in it than society as a whole, and the Tory Party and most other political parties, whether it's the UKIPs or the Brexit Party. Anti-Semitism is an absolute crime and should be opposed. But let's fight it where it exists. Let's not invent its presence within the Labour Party. The idea, as I say to you, Richie, that you've got Labour Party members jumping about Labour Party meetings saying Hitler was right, Hitler didn't go far enough, it's garbage, mate. It's just garbage. It's just manufactured garbage.
Let me just mention this before I ask you about Trump. I don't see it in society. And I've asked my Jewish mates if they had any examples. Has it happened to them? They said no. Back in 2017, we had the biggest ever survey in this country about attitudes towards Jews. It was massive. The biggest survey ever conducted on anything in the UK. It was conducted by the Institute for Jewish Policy Research. And they basically found that anti-Semitism in the country is non-existent. That was in 2017, because people don't care. Yeah, you have the odd Egypt, you know, who, you know, again, you know, blame the Jews for everything. And but generally, that survey, the biggest of all time, and it says, no, it's not happening. I know the campaign against anti-Semitism has contradicted that, but they're a shadowy group, those lads. I don't like them at all. That's the charity with Gideon Falter. Bit of a witchfinder general.
Same survey, that same quantitative evidence-based survey, and by the way, we've got to move away from personal opinions towards quantitative-based evidence. That same survey didn't just say that anti-Semitism was less of a problem than it ever had been in decades. It also said anti-Semitism as a problem within the Labour Party was less of a problem in 2017 than it was in 2015. In other words, the problem has diminished under Jeremy Corbyn's leadership. Yeah. Why is Panorama not telling you that?
Fair enough. Let's move on. Tommy Sheridan is our guest. We've got Tommy for about another 10 minutes. The time is flying. Thanks for all the tweets, by the way. Thanks to Mwinga, who was moved by comments you made about Jeremy earlier on. Cheers for that, Mwinga. Hi to Ricky Emmett. How you doing, Ricky? Hi to Gail. Very interested in listening to Tommy tonight. Hi to Mark Richards, who says there's more anti-Semitism in the Conservative Party than the Labour Party, alleges Mark. I know people have asked questions of Conservative Party members, their attitudes towards Islam, but that's another story. Let's talk about Donald Trump, the Iran deal. Tommy, I'll very briefly give you where I am, and then I'll get out of your way, because my listeners know what I think. Trump is an absolute moron. He's the biggest moron, I suppose, that's ever held high office anywhere. This guy who tweets at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, he's got no filter, says things that are patently offensive and racist. Offensive, maybe I shouldn't use that word, but patently xenophobic. Guy's an absolute clown. I have this feeling that we've all been played from the get-go, all of us. This reality television president has been kind of, I don't know, segued in somehow to re-engage people with the political process when people were getting fed up of it. I know it's a wild conspiracy theory. I'm not trying to in any way condone or to take a kind of a soft approach to what Trump tweets, because he's an absolute idiot. But I wonder about it. I wonder, is there something deeper going on? He's told four congresswomen today, three of whom were born in the States last night, I think, one of whom came to the country as a refugee. They're four left-leaning, they're Democratic congresswomen, left-leaning. Basically, go back to where you came from, because it's a lot worse over there. It's on every news, television, radio channel today. What's going on? Who is this guy, Donald Trump, Tommy? What's going on here?
I think the description you've just given is very important, Richie. This is a moron we're dealing with. This is a guy with the lights on, but nobody's inside. I mean, this guy is an empty head. There is no doubt he is the least qualified individual to ever hold high office in the planet. Never mind America, in the planet. And it is frightening. You have, as you said, four congresswomen who, for attacking Trump on his anti-immigration policies and imprisoning children in camps. By the way, something Obama started, we should never forget.
Yeah, fair enough. But fair play, Tommy.
He gets attacked for that, and his response is, you should go back to your own countries. They're even more corrupt. Three of the women were born in America. One was born in Somalia, a country that's been ruined by US intervention over decades. And this guy tweets that. This is the president of the, inverted commas, free world, right? It is absolutely atrocious, Richie. And, you know, I've got to say this to you. I think it was sad that America voted for Trump. I was so angry about it. I was so disappointed about it. But I think I've maybe told you this story before. I certainly wrote about it. But I made friends with Coolio, the rapper from Compton, many years ago when I was in Celebrity Big Brother. And I've kept in touch with Coolio, and we talked on the phone. And a couple of years ago, he came over to Glasgow. He wanted to go and see the famous Glasgow Celtic, and I took him to see Celtic at Parkhead, and he loved it. But I said to him at the time, me and him and LaToya Jackson, we were allowed in the Big Brother house in 2009 to watch the inauguration speech, January 2010, of Obama. And he was crying during it. He was crying because he was particularly touched by the point Obama made about his grandparents being slaves and how they never thought they would ever see anybody in their family in the White House. And that really touched Coolio. So when I spoke to him in Glasgow just a couple of years ago, I said to him, I said, what went on, mate? What's happening? And he said something that was very, very telling. He said, listen, Trump, and I know I can't repeat on air what he said about Trump, but it was a very offensive term that I understand why he said it. But he then said to me, but the alternative wasn't much better. The alternative wasn't much better. Now, that's the problem, Richie, here. Hillary Clinton, I think, would have been even worse than Trump as far as international bullying and invading of other countries is concerned. Not worse in terms of polished performances, in terms of racist tweets and all the rest of it, but much worse in terms of loss of life. This is the woman who absolutely pushed for the invasion of Libya. This is the woman who is behind the invasion of 7 other countries and the increased bombings and the use of the drones across the Middle East. This is a woman who, in my opinion, is a warmonger, who supported the Iraq invasion to the hilt. And that was the alternative, Richie.
That was the alternative.
That was the alternative. And that explains to me why so many blacks and so many working class people were disengaged from the electoral process and didn't bother voting. Let's remember, Trump received 3 million less votes than Hillary Clinton did across America. But because of the electoral system there, he managed to win enough electoral college votes. But the problem was a lot of blacks, a lot of Hispanics, and a lot of the working class didn't bother voting.
They never turned up.
What America needs is somebody that's going to articulate the views of the working classes. I don't think he's perfect by any manner of means, but my hope is that Bernie Sanders doesn't get cheated out of the nomination this time. It's now clear, and it's been admitted by Hillary backers, that he was cheated the last time out of the nomination. He won the popular vote, but the Democratic Party didn't want him as the candidate. We need somebody who can actually stand up with spotless hands and attack Trump. If you get somebody whose hands are dipped in the blood of all the illegal invasions they've been involved in and try and attack Trump, he just laughs at them. But he won't be able to laugh at the likes of Bernie Sanders. So, to me, 2020 is very, very much open for a candidate of the left to win the presidential election.
It's interesting, talking about Trump, one of the things, I mean, I watched it as closely as you did and as anybody else in the media, and I didn't think he'd win. I thought Clinton would win. But when he did win, I made the bet or the prediction that, you know, that he wouldn't honour the pledges, the campaign pledges he made. But despite the carry-on of the man in the primaries before he got the nomination and before he went against Clinton, despite the conduct of him, he was saying things that people, even socialists like you and me, would have found appealing. He was saying, enough's enough with, you know, wars overseas, sending American troops overseas to fight these wars. Interventionism has to end. And a lot of people soaked that up as well and believed that and said, right, well, he is a bit of an arse, right? But we can support this. I mean, amen, brothers and sisters, if the man... Of course, nothing like that has happened. Of course, he's gone the other way. I mean, we would have argued about... Go ahead, Tommy.
One of his most popular slogans, which really had a resonance with people like you and me and other socialists, was he was going to drain the swamp. Drained the swamp. He identified the horrible corruption and nepotism that exists in Washington among the politicians and the movers and shakers, and he said he was going to drain the swamp. The problem is, he lives in the bloody swamp. He's in the swamp himself. He's been born in the swamp. He can't drain it because he's part of it. But somebody like Sanders, who's coming along now and saying, when people like Joe Biden, one of his opponents, he said in a meeting the other day, Bernie says it's the 500 billionaires in America that's the problem. They're not the problem. And Sanders replied immediately, yes, they are. They are the problem because they're the ones that have benefited from the tax cuts. They're the ones that are no paying their income taxes. They're the ones that are no paying living wages to their workers. They're the problem and we need to tackle them. That's my language, Richie, and that's why I hope Sanders wins the presidential election.
Final question now. This is where you and I think, will always disagree, but I have enormous respect for your experience. But final question. I studying history as in high school and then studying it at third level, I fell in love with Salvador Allende and then later on Hugo Chavez. And I would believe that Allende and the nationalisation of the copper mines and all of that, Allende for me was a real socialist. A real socialist.
An inspiration. People should read his book as well. The diaries. It's absolutely written mostly by his daughter and his wife. It's the Salvador Allende reader. It is an inspiration for any of your listeners.
Well said, mate. Absolutely right. So here's a very quick point, and you have the floor then for the last couple of minutes to answer this. The term socialist has been stolen. It's been hijacked by people who are not socialists. And I look at Bernie and Jeremy and John McDonnell and I see them as left social democrats. They're not socialists. We've never had socialism anywhere except some of the countries we've talked about where it has worked and it didn't result in stealing money from industrialists or making them poor. You see, this is what the bloody right-wing media does. It says that socialism means stealing money from people who earned it and giving it to the undeserved. Nothing could be further from the truth. And I think these people, Sanders, Corbyn, et al., let's say et al., they're not socialists, they're social democrats. We don't know any socialists in mainstream politics in 2019. I don't think they exist. I will not interrupt you. You have the final word on that. We've been listening to Tommy Sheridan this evening. Tommy, over to you.
Richie, I think my response to you would be this. Everything in life is relative. And when you are in a position of the likes of Fidel Castro facing up to a dictator, and your only way of fighting back is, unfortunately, to take up the gun, when your only way to win freedom for your people is to join up with the likes of Che Guevara, when Hugo Chavez faces a military dictatorship in Venezuela and decides his only way to take up the cause of the working class is first of all through an attempted coup which was defeated, but then he turned to the election and the electoral front and was hugely successful. These individuals, in my opinion, were socialists in their time, in their country, in their cultures. They've got different histories, they've got different cultures, and they've got different times that they lived in. Personally, although I am not a member of the Labour Party, as I've repeated, and I would have disagreements and debates with John McDonnell and with Jeremy on this or that detail, I reject the idea that they're not socialists. I think they're socialists. I think they're socialists in their time, in their relative way, they're socialists. I think they've been schooled by Tony Benn, whom I loved and admired very much. I think they were friends of Bob Crowe, who I loved and admired very much, and they learned from them, and they've come up through the movement together. So they may not die with machine guns in their hand, as Salvador Allende did, but I think they are committed socialists in that they are committed to justice, to equality, and to peace. And that's what makes them dangerous, and that's why the British media and the British establishment despise them.
And that was the last word. I'm a man of my word. You can read Citizen, it's at Citizen Tommy on Twitter, and I've just tweeted a link to where you can find Tommy. If it's the first time you've heard him, I've got a fairly sizable audience in the US. one or two people tweeting they're very interested in listening to you. They've heard you for the first time. Tommy's obviously hugely well known here and in Ireland. Follow him at Citizen Tommy on Twitter, sputniknews.com/authors/Tommy_Sheridan. I've tweeted a link out there. Thanks for your time, mate. It flies by when you're on. Love having you on, Tommy.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for allowing me to give my opinions. And what I love about you, Richie, is we don't always agree with each other, brother Lou. I think we agree 9 times out of 10, but you always give us a fair crack at the whip, pal.
Yeah, everybody. It's the way it should be. Cheers, Tommy. I look forward to reading your next piece, mate. Bye for now. Tommy Sheridan, live on the line from Glasgow this evening. It's at Citizen Tommy on Twitter, as I said. The time is approaching 30 seconds to the top of the hour. That is 30 seconds to the top of the hour. Keep the tweets coming in. I will read some in a minute. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's my Twitter handle. This is your Richie Allen Show. It is broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, and multiple other platforms as well. We're going to... Are we? Do we have time to do... I like doing... I don't do it often enough. Let's head over to FSN. Let's head over to FSN even. Be nice if you could say it, Richie. Let's go to FSN just to get the latest headlines. There's no harm in that. Can we do that? Can we actually do that? Or can we not do it? You know? Monday. We can do it, huh? You see? It's over to FSN in London for the latest headlines on your Richie Allen Show. The time is exactly 6 o'clock.
From Feature Story News, I'm Natalie Powell with your latest world news. Former South African President Jacob Zuma has told an inquiry that the allegations of corruption against him were a conspiracy and he has been vilified. Australian police have identified the remains of a missing French backpacker. And England's cricket team are celebrating their dramatic host nation win against New Zealand in the Cricket World Cup.
Thanks, Natalie Powell. You got to feel sorry for New Zealand. How dreadfully unlucky they were in the World Cricket. The one day, of course, the World Cup of Cricket yesterday afternoon. Hi to Patricia. How you doing, Patricia? Richie, Trump, also known as the Liar-in-Chief, hasn't kept any of his promises, but his cult followers continue to support him. Trump knows the more racist and hateful he is, the idiots who are his base will wave their American flags made in China and yell, USA, USA, how sad, says Patricia. Thank you for that, Patricia. Salvador Allende, true socialist, says Ricky Emmett. Yes, he was. And I'm not going to editorialise. I said that Tommy had the last word, so I'm not going to say any more on that. Lots of tweets on the conversation with Tommy. Hi to La Antenna. How you doing? Thanks for the recommendation there about the samples. I appreciate that. Hi to Spiro as well. How you doing, Spiro? Right, we are the Richie Allen Show. You and me. You and me are the Richie Allen Show. We're what makes it. Thanks for tuning in. Going to be speaking to Stephen Lendeman, who will be live in the Windy City of Chicago in about 6 or 7 minutes' time. I can't wait for that. Love listening to Stephen Lendeman. This is the Richie Allen Show.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Yes, don't forget the live streams on YouTube in the small hours of the morning. Small hours of the morning for some people. 9:30 a.m. UK time. Live on YouTube. I take a glance through the UK's newspapers. I read some super chats and messages that come in from you, and we have a bit of a giggle. It's got nothing whatsoever to do with the Richie Allen Radio Show at all. It's just something I said I would do, and I kept my word. It isn't marvellous now. It's not got, you know, wonderful production values. I'm using a basic bit of software. I can barely put some photographs on there, but it's a bit of a giggle. And it's Monday to Friday at 9:30 a.m. UK time. It's just me on YouTube. My YouTube channel is youtube.com/Richie Allen Show. Number of you are tweeting about blaming people. It is rather ridiculous, of course, to blame any group of people. Any group of people. Whether it's the Jews. The Jews. You know, those morons. And you've got to be... I don't mean the Jews are morons. I mean the morons who use terms like Jew-tube. And Juggle and all that sort of stuff. They're idiots. But you've got to be consistent when it comes to freedom of speech. I endorse their right to be stupid. People who blame the Jews. People who blame Muslims. Nobody's ever blamed the Irish for anything. Why have we never been blamed? If a bar is emptied out and there's no drink left, we get blamed, I suppose. Yeah, I've emptied out a few bars in my time. Here's Amy Winehouse on the Richie Allen Show.
All I can ever be to you is a darkness that we know, and this regret I got to strive.
Amy Winehouse on the Richie Allen Show. The time is nearly 7 minutes past the hour. Welcome to the programme if you're just joining it. Welcome. Thanks for choosing your Richie Allen Show, Europe's most listened to independent radio show. Thanks for choosing it. The programme's archived on Podomatic.com, Spotify, iTunes, and the Truth Seeker app, where there is a lot of content. Wonderful. You'll get all sorts of content on the Truth Seeker app. You'll get a lot of stuff there, where you'll hear opinions that differ to the opinions maybe you hear on this programme. Although on this programme you hear everything, really. You hear everything, don't you, really? But in terms of my opinions, that's no bad thing. No bad thing. Mark says, top man Tommy Sheridan, they didn't break him. Murdoch and his minions, a warrior, he says, an example and a great guest. A good guy, Tommy. Very good writer, very sincere man, very sincere in his beliefs. And I respect him. Where we differ is obvious. You know, I don't believe that any change will ever be brought to bear through the ballot box. Ever. And that's what I've concluded. But I have enormous respect for everybody else and their opinions. And I don't have the luxury, even, to think that I know better than them. I just know what I think. Bass Ninja says, Richie, we can start blaming the Irish for Bono. How's that? Fair, methinks, says Bass Ninja. Maybe, maybe. Although the Irish will take a pass on Clinton, on Bono, because we think Bono was destroyed by Bill Clinton. I think he was groomed by Bill Clinton. Groomed. And I did a long-winded rant one morning on Sunday View about 2 years ago, 2.5, 3 years ago. And it came up. And it was one of my best, I suppose, streams of consciousness. Because I started to remember things long forgotten about how Bill O'Clinton, when he was running for president, was introduced to U2 and started basically using U2. Because they were the hottest thing since the Beatles at that time, which they were. On the Zoo TV tour going around America and around the world, nothing had ever been witnessed like it ever. Mick Jagger had gone to Bono and said, we're giving up, can't top this, it's unbelievable. Clinton got involved, introduced Bono to George Stephanopoulos and others, and then Bono was in the inner circle. I know Larry Mullen Jr., the drummer of U2, didn't like that very much. But I speculated in a long-winded rant, when isn't it long-winded, Richie, you might say, about Clinton's influence on Bono. Excuse me. I speculated. So I did. Shall we get our next guest on the line? Let's get him on. He's a journalist. And you can read him daily at stephenlendman.org, where he writes exhaustively about geopolitical affairs from the point of view that you don't get anywhere else. Terrific stuff. I first came across Stephen when I was making radio programmes in Spain. He was good enough to come on the programme then. Loved having him on. And I can't say enough about the guy. Go to stephenlendman.org. That's stephenlendman.org. And bookmark the website. It is true journalism. It really is. There's a number of things we're going to talk about. We are going to talk a little bit about the United States, the legacy of Trump's pullout of the JCPOA, of course, which we know is the Iranian nuclear deal. We'll talk a little bit about Israel, the only nation without official borders, its influence on the US, and we'll talk about more besides. He's an amazing writer, stephenlendman.org. Bookmark the website. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Stephen Lendman. Stephen, thanks as always for your time. How are you doing? How are things?
Oh, Richie, it's great to be on with you. Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm getting older, but I'm doing okay.
You're brilliant. You always say that to me, and I know you're a bit old. You're a bit older than the usual guest, but you sound brilliant, and your pen. I know you.
A bit older than the average beer.
That's right. The average beer. I say your pen is still very sharp.
For a guy my age, Richie, I've still got a lot of mustard in me.
You got plenty of mustard in you, and I was reading you over the weekend. Saturday afternoon, sitting at home, I was on stephenlendman.org. I was reading you over the weekend. Just a word on this kind of I see it as a kind of a puppet show where you've got Donald Trump shouting at people on Twitter, telling them to go back to where they came from. These congresswomen, some of whom are interesting women, some of them say things that I like to hear about Israel and about Palestine. Is it theatre, this, or is it something else? How do you view this sort of thing, these Twitter spats?
Well, I really wonder whether somebody is directing some of his comments. I know a lot of what he says, he just spouts off extemporaneously, especially public comments. I'm not sure about his Twitter remarks. I think they're probably read by somebody. He probably gets some through on his own because he might make Twitter remarks at various hours. And I don't know that anybody checking on what he's saying to correct grammar or whatever, staying up in the middle of the night to just check on him. But I suspect a lot of what he's tweeting is looked over to be sure that if he made an error, they'll correct him to be sure he doesn't embarrass himself, even though he does once in a while. And I just wonder, Richie, whether some of these racist remarks are deliberately made because hardliners, his base in America, the extremist base in America that support people who express views like the ones that he expresses, maybe they go for this kind of stuff. I mean, he outrages people like me and you and anybody else with any kind of common sense. But there are lots of people in America, very extremist in their views, whether they're right wing or anything else. And this may be red meat for them. So they like these kind of comments and they eat it up. And I think Trump makes them thinking it's good campaign stuff.
Well said, Stephen. You've got me thinking back to when Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was in charge in Iran, although I know the supreme leader, the Ayatollah Khamenei, is the leader. But when Ahmadinejad was the president, he would often say things and the Israelis would go bananas and scream about it. But 'twas obvious to me that Ahmadinejad was just speaking to his base, really. They do that a lot, don't they, people? Not just Western leaders in the East, in Russia. I'm sure Putin does it as well. Have I lost Stephen? I lost you momentarily. Sorry, Stephen. We lost each other. No, I was just making the point that this is what, you know, presidents and prime ministers do. They whip up their base every now and then.
Oh, indeed. Although so often they've misquoted Iranian leaders, whether it's Ahmadinejad or anybody else, so often the words are twisted and completely losing the meaning of what they said. U.S. hostility toward Iran has been so extreme since its 1979 revolution.
Yeah.
And by the way, I remember that so vividly. And while it was happening, I really didn't understand what it was all about. It took until after it was over for me to realize that the Iranians overthrew the 1953 coup, the first CIA coup against Mohammad Mossadegh, a democratic leader of Iran, and institute 25 years of fascist tyranny. And the Iranians overthrew that. That's really what this was all about.
Of course.
And go ahead, Richie.
No, I'm just saying this is great. You're absolutely right. And then to compound matters, we, as in we, the West, the US, of course, but with the support of Israel and the UK in the 80s, we gave every horrible weapon that was ever made to Saddam Hussein to go and try and destroy Iran. So the aggressor here has never been the Iranians.
Oh, absolutely not. Iran has never attacked another country. Iran, the nation, has not attacked another country in maybe two or three centuries. The Islamic Republic since 1979 never attacked another country. Forget the rhetoric. It really never threatened anybody because it has no intention of attacking Israel or any other country. And the idea that Iran is accused of making these threats and committing hostile acts and being a quote unquote, you know, what AIPAC says and other hotliners in the West, Iran, the leading state sponsor of terrorism, well, that's a dubious distinction that applies to the U.S. and its junior partners in Britain, Richie, as you know, and Israel and other NATO countries. And that's what these people do, not Iran.
I'm fascinated, Stephen, that when you were observing the revolution in 1979 and you said that you didn't know what was going on, I'm fascinated about the media, because we often think that the media has gotten progressively worse. And I know that major corporations have been allowed to acquire, to swallow up smaller media bureaus and organisations, and that's been very bad for plurality. But I'm guessing that centrally, the national media has always been rubbish, has it? I mean, even back in 79, would there have been any US station nationally, you know, explaining that, well, you know, the Iranians are really only taking their country back? Or was it just as bad then as it is now?
Well, I think it's worse now because there are channels on TV, and but of course the media is much more centrally concentrated. There were so many, many smaller media outlets, but now there were about half a dozen or maybe six or eight major media corporations in the West, and they dominate the news, and they put out the material that they want people to know, not what they need to know. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
The U.S. media, which is the one that I follow the BBC a little years ago, but I mainly followed the U.S. media when I followed any, whether it was television or print media, and it was always bad. But it was a lot. It wasn't as bad earlier as now, because I remember making a comment in one of my articles that the U.S. on television went from Walter Cronkite, who was a real journalist, even though he was far from perfect, but we went from Walter Cronkite to Katie Couric, who was an entertainer who became an anchor of the CBS Evening News in America, which showed how news in America has just been degraded to a horrendous state. And to put an entertainer to anchoring news, I mean, Cronkite was a legitimate journalist that I remember very well, and he reported accurately times on the war in Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson once said, America lost the war in Vietnam because of Walter Cronkite.
Wow. Do you know, that isn't that important for our listeners to understand? Stephen Lendman is our guest today. StephenLendman.org. Wonderful writer. I really am not blowing smoke at Stephen. He's brilliant. And his articles on Iran and the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, are excellent. Always, but this weekend they're right on, really sharp. Read StephenLendman.org. Is it true, Stephen, that the military-industrial complex basically had a collective heart attack after the Vietnam War because the reporting was so right on and was so in the public interest to tell the public about the horrors of Vietnam that the military-industrial complex got together? And that's when the notion of embedding journalists with the military formulated in their minds. Is that true? Is that what happened?
That's exactly right, Richie. That's exactly what happened. Vietnam ended in April 1975. This certainly was not a quiet period, but it was a relatively quiet period. The U.S. engaged in proxy wars from them until the 1991 Gulf War, and Saddam Hussein was suckered into invading Kuwait. Kuwait was stealing Iraqi oil. Saddam tried reasoning with the Kuwaitis to stop this stuff. You know, whatever our disagreements, let's resolve them diplomatically. But Kuwait was guided by the U.S. Everything going on was orchestrated by the U.S. Senior Bush at that time, until Clinton took over in 1992. But Senior Bush, I forget all the initials.
Yeah, H.W., yeah, that's right.
Walker Bush.
Yeah.
He was the one orchestrating. His regime was the one orchestrating it. And Saddam did not want a war, but he was literally sucking into sending troops into Kuwait, which is exactly what the U.S. wanted. And, of course, the rest is history, as we know. The Gulf War and hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops, maybe 100 or 200 or 300,000 Iraqis were murdered in cold blood. The war only lasted about 4 weeks. The U.S., I think, lost about 100 troops, and all these Iraqis were killed. And then the sanctions war that went on after that until the 2003 war. But you're absolutely right. Instead of letting journalists report accurately what was going on in U.S. war theaters, they were embedded in U.S. forces in the field. And what they reported was guided and orchestrated so they could only do what the U.S. wanted them to do. But they do it willingly, Richie. They don't do it. They don't feel like they're forced to do it. They willingly report the official narrative and suppress the important things that the authorities in Washington don't want the public to know.
That's fair enough. I'm going to, you and I, we never have arguments. We need to have a couple of arguments, me and you. I'm going to slightly argue with you there. I'm going to slightly argue with you. While I agree with that central point, Stephen, I respectfully think that if you're with them, You know, so if you know that they're going to invade Iraq and you go along with the 79th Battalion, it's kind of understandable that you form an emotional bond with the men and women, the soldiers, and that you start to, you know, to like them, maybe to become part of them and to maybe feel a bit protected by them. And maybe, you know, maybe we can maybe slightly forgive the embedded journalists for that, because that's what the whole point of embedding was. Get them, I don't mean Stockholm syndrome, but get them to form an emotional bond with the soldiers, maybe.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. But at the same time, I think there's been a big difference in this era, beginning with the Gulf War, compared to World War II, which I didn't follow war correspondence then, but I read about them later. I think the most famous U.S. one, I believe, was Ernie Pyle. So I guess he was sort of embedded in U.S. forces. He was in the field, reporting on the war, reporting on the battles. But the reporting then was much more accurate about what was going on than the reporting beginning in 1991, the Gulf War, and the reporting in the 1980s on the Central American wars, the U.S. proxy wars. I mean, that was pretty bad reporting about that as well.
Yeah.
But again, we had war correspondents. John Pilger was a war correspondent. That was in Vietnam. And, of course, he reported accurately on it. And in World War II, Ernie Pyle, I think, reported pretty accurately on what was going on. But we really had evil forces, the U.S. and Britain and the others were battling. So, I mean, you had to go along with the U.S. forces. Who could support Nazi Germany or Imperial Japan? I think Pyle was in Europe.
Yeah, very good, Stephen. Stephen Lendman is our guest, stephenlendman.org. Check him out if you haven't before. Just before we talk about Iran and this very, very serious issue, Patricia makes a brilliant point here. We know at the moment, and you and I don't have to get into this, Stephen, it's a different subject, but the billionaire Jeffrey Epstein is a convicted paedophile, and he's in trouble because there are more allegations dating back that have come out of an old civil case that he settled. And we know that he was very, very friendly with members of the royal family. We know that he was very friendly with Bill Clinton. We know that Bill Clinton travelled on his private plane, which has been nicknamed the Lolita Express. We also know that Donald Trump has spent quite a bit of time around him. And Patricia makes a very good point. Maybe this drama with Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar, maybe Trump is very clever and is starting a drama to deflect attention away from the scandal of Jeffrey Epstein, because Epstein is intimately connected to the establishment. Just a quick comment on that, Stephen, or you don't have to comment if you don't want. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I certainly agree. I did not write about Epstein. It's such a sleazy thing. I stayed away from it. I don't enjoy writing about sex or anything related to it, but there's no question the guy is super wealthy. He's connected to all kinds of high-level people in Britain, the U.S., elsewhere probably, travels the world, has his own private jet, expensive mansions in different countries, and I think there were rumors that he had hidden cameras in his estates, and he reported what was going on with the rich and famous people who took advantage of the appetizers he provided for them, and if anyone went after him and wanted to put him away for life or anything even close to that, then he could spill the beans on these people. Who knows what people he has in mind? Bill Clinton, we know about, probably is involved. Maybe Trump was involved, but could be all kinds. I mean, maybe the British royal family is involved. I don't know, maybe there's a queen, so I doubt she's involved.
Yeah. I don't know. Listen, well, I'm not going to say anything either, because like yourself, I try to always be ethical. I don't know anything about the queen, but I know that two of her sons were very close to notorious paedophiles, Epstein and Andrew. The final thing I would say on it is, I wonder, was Epstein connected to the intelligence agencies? Because if you're bringing people from society and from political circles to a house where children are being, God forgive me for, I mean, it's horrible to think of it. It's rotten to be talking about this. There might be children listening, but children were raped. And you wonder, doing that and filming it, maybe it wasn't Epstein that was keeping himself safe by nature of filming it. Maybe Epstein was working for somebody else, but that's just speculation, Stephen, but you never know.
Yeah, that's right. He could be connected to Mossad or a CIA, but I honestly don't
NSA,
know.
Yeah.
And yeah. I certainly wouldn't say it if I didn't have any information that seemed verifiable.
100% right. You're right to say that, and I'm wrong to speculate without having any evidence. But I wonder, we know the establishment has done that in the past. Brilliant stuff from Stephen Lendman on stephenlendman.org. Love the piece on the tanker war. What was, I mean, we had this footage. I was going to give you a shout at the time, but then things, crazy stuff going on domestically here. I was doing shows earlier in the morning and I couldn't get you on the show, but I wanted to talk to you about it. This alleged attack by the Iranians on these tankers, you don't buy it, Stephen, do you? You think that, again, this has got intelligence agencies written all over it?
Yeah, I really believe it's the CIA, Mossad, these people involved. The question I always ask and that everybody should ask is, qui bono? Who benefits from this stuff? What possible benefit could Iran have by attacking Saudi or UAE or Norwegian tankers in Middle East waters? What could Iran possibly gain from this? Well, there's absolutely nothing. But we know that the U.S. and Israel and their allies can gain from this. So it makes sense to me that these are the people behind these attacks, not Iran. Again, you have to do something with a purpose in mind, and there's no purpose at all for Iran to have committed these things, including attacking a Saudi pipeline. The one thing we know Iran did was down a U.S. spy plane. After warning the plane several times to get out of Iranian airspace, it got no answer. The plane was unmanned, and Iran downed it. There was a manned aircraft along with it that Iran did not shoot down. It did not want to kill U.S. Personnel to really provoke the U.S. maybe into doing something very hostile. So it acted very sensibly. It downed the drone, but not the manned aircraft. They were both together illegally in Iranian airspace. And just imagine if an Iranian plane was in U.S. airspace, Richie, you know, it wouldn't last 2 minutes. It would be downed.
Absolutely. And people should be asking themselves, how dare the United States position military bases all over the world? But let me just be devil's advocate, because some of our listeners will be listening and they will say, Richie and your friend Mr. Lendman, you always seem to give a pass to countries like Iran, countries like Syria, countries like Libya. You always give them a pass as if they're angelic, while we criticise the United States, the UK, Israel, France all the time. We bash them, we romanticise these countries, and we create an impression that they are always the victim. These countries are players on the scene as well. They're doing things, you know, with a bit of subterfuge. They might not be invading countries, but they're not angels. Surely even a broken clock is right twice a day. Maybe guys like me and you, Stephen, we are very coloured in our opinion of Iran because of our long-held disdain for our own countries and for Israel. What do you say to that?
Well, I absolutely agree with that. There are no ruling authorities who are perfect. They all do things that you and I would find very distasteful and illegal at times. There's no question about that. But there is no doubt that Iran is not at a war with anybody. Venezuela is not at war with anybody. Russia and China aren't at war with anybody. And the U.S. and Israel are at war seemingly with everybody. I mean, these are the most serious. I mean, we can talk about sleazebag Epstein, but his offenses are minor compared to crimes of war and against humanity and genocide. These are real crimes. These are the ones I want to see addressed, and then we can worry about the more minor ones. And as long as Iran really is the victim in the imperial game, it's not the aggressor. So this is what I side with Iran on. And I could go on Iranian TV, Press TV, and speak as freely as I do with you, Richie, and in my articles. I have never been on U.S. television, except there was one exception. There were two exceptions. A Fox News radio station in Utah had me on a few times, and they told me before they invited me on that we are not like the other Fox News stations. And they were right. They gave me about 30 minutes with two hosts, and they allowed me to speak as freely as I'm doing with you. And I was interviewed by CBS local television in Chicago, Richie.
Go on.
I was out walking early in the morning. It had nothing to do with my views on world events. I was out walking very early in the morning, about 6:30 in the morning, and about an hour before I got there, there was a shooting along the street that I was walking. walking on, and there were police there roping off the area, and CBS News was there looking for people to interview. I just happened to walk past them. They stopped me and asked me if they would interview me, and I agreed. So I made a few comments, and the most important things I said, they airbrushed out.
Of course they did. Yeah, of course they did. Look, I'm going to be the devil's advocate. And I'm going
They include, they gave me about 20 seconds of airtime.
20 seconds.
Yeah. Stuff that was really very, very inconsequential. But that's the way they. Anyway, I got on CBS News.
You're on CBS News. The man Lendemann was on CBS News. Now, look, I'm going to be the devil's advocate again. When I was in London at a television channel in London, I got to know some of the people working at Press TV in Hanger Lane in London. And I liked them. I did like them a lot. They were nice people. And you said there now that when you go on Iranian television, you can say whatever you want. So you opened the door to that, my friend. I'm going to put my... I'm going to be John Grisham here. I'm going to be... I'm going to get very legal with you. I'm not sure that's true. Because if I was to go on... I've never been asked to go on Iranian television. I'm not well known enough to be invited on Iranian television. But if I did and I was in a long discussion and we talked about human rights and I was to say... on Iranian television, that I don't like certain things that go on in the country, you know, the sorts of things I'm talking about around religion, you know, I'm not sure I'd be invited back. So I'm not sure just how free Press TV is in terms of, I think Press TV invites you on, first of all, because you're a brilliant speaker, you're a real journalist, and you're very fair. And you are very fair, you're very open-minded. But I think... I'm not sure it's as free as you say it is. What do you think?
Well, again, Iran is not faultless on things.
Yeah.
Press TV comments on geopolitical issues. And, of course, it's an English language television station. Farsi is the Iranian language. And I don't follow the local Iranian news in their own language, of course. I go to a few of their websites and see translations of their stuff. But you're absolutely right, Richie. They're at fault for some of the things they do. They have the death penalty, which I absolutely oppose.
Yeah.
I wish they would abolish the death penalty. Nobody should be put to death for any reason. If people commit a crime, then they should be put on trial. If they're guilty, convict them and put them in prison and make them pay an offense, an appropriate one. But nobody should be submitted to capital punishment. So I object to that.
Fair
and
breaking,
if I was in Iran and meeting with any of their people, I would say that.
I know you would. Don't think for a second that I was suggesting now that you wouldn't. God, I don't want you to get that number. I know you would. You've got cojones. I know you would. I was very disturbed by a story many years ago about a 14-year-old girl who was accused of adultery and was then hung. Now, that's not Iran. I don't believe that's everybody in Iran. And Iran's human rights record domestically pales by comparison to the dreadful human rights record of the United States and Israel. So, listen, you know, people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. I wasn't suggesting that you wouldn't bring something like that up. I just wonder, you know... If you did, would you ever be invited back again? Maybe I'm being a bit childish here, but look, it's just semantics, Stephen. But anyway.
I think there have been a few times when I make some remarks on air that I think were different from the official narrative in Iran, and they've invited me on many times. They invite me on two ways. They either invite me on to be live on television. My video hasn't been working for a long time, so they've been inviting me on, I believe, putting a photo of me up and letting me comment. They invite me on that way, and they call me to make comments about a particular issue, and they record them, and then they include me in an article with comments from others. I've read the material that they post about the things that I've said. I don't ever recall that they're putting something up that was different from the remarks that I made. So they've stuck with my remarks. I respect them for that. And the fact that they invite me, the reason they came on to me, Richie, was because I'm sure they picked up on the articles that I wrote, being very critical of U.S. policies about Iran. So I'm valuable to them as somebody to come on to criticize the U.S. in its policies toward the country. They like me for that. And I've been on many, many times for many years. I know some of their people. I mean, they could call me later today to come on. I wouldn't be surprised.
They're excellent. They do excellent work. And of course, it's important for them to share with their audience the fact that there are American journalists who are completely opposed to the conduct of its government. It's really important stuff. It's StephenLendman.org. Stephen's going to stay with me. We said 25 minutes, and he is a very busy man, but he might stay with me for another 5 minutes because this is important. Has the Iranian government played it well in the last few weeks? Have they gotten it spot on, word perfect, the way they've responded to this aggression?
I think they've done very well, Richie. Britain, the last couple of days, Britain tried to ensnare Iran into attacking one of its tankers going through the Strait of Hormuz. I think the tanker was empty. I don't think there was any oil on it, but that's immaterial. There was a UK frigate. You know this story. A UK frigate trailing the British tanker. There was an Iranian. I think there was an Iranian vessel nearby, either a frigate or another vessel. They did not entrap Iran into attacking UK. A tanker. Iran wouldn't fall for the stunt. Iran is very concerned about the tanker that the Iranian tanker that the British seized. It said it will have consequences for Britain, but Iran will deal out consequences to Britain in an asymmetrical way, its own way at its own time, and it won't be a hostile, belligerent act the way the U.S. and Britain acts. It'll be in some other way. So Iran did not fall for this stunt. Nothing happened. The incident passed without any incident from Iran at all. And of course, the reports by Britain and Western media were that Iran tried to attack a British tanker, seize a British tanker, which it did not. There was nothing indicating that happened. And Iran is too smart to fall for the stuff that the UK and Britain are trying to pull. I think it's done very well with what's going on. It's trying to handle the seizure of its tanker legally. Britain's foreign minister, you know this, I'm sure, Britain's foreign minister Jeremy Hunt said that they will release the tanker if Iran promises not to deliver oil to Syria or something like that.
Yeah.
And Iran said it is free to ship oil to any markets that are willing to take it, which is its legal right, and it should be free. It's not going to cut a deal with Britain and sacrifice its legal rights, not that it should. On the Iranian issue in general, Richie, I'm very concerned. I don't know that we're heading for this, but I'm very concerned about the risk of Pompeo and Bolton and other hardliners surrounding Trump pushing him toward attacking Iran, because that would really explode the Middle East in greater violence than already. It would be a terrible catastrophe if something like this happens. Iran is heavily armed. It can hit back very hard against countries attacking it. Its missiles can attack anywhere in Israel. It can strike U.S. bases. If Iran is attacked, it will retaliate as it's legal right to do. The war could be escalated into something more serious, and we could see something far more serious than anything else post 9/11. We could have a possible global war if something like this happens. I'm very concerned. I mean, Pompeo and Bolton want war in Iran. For a while, I thought Pompeo did not, but the more recent remarks he made, I think he does want war in Iran. Bolton has wanted war on Iran long before he got into the Trump regime.
That's right. I wonder.
Manipulated.
That's right, Steve. I wonder, there have been reports today that Donald Trump is tired of Bolton. He's tired of listening to the warmongering. Whatever Trump is, and however much Trump is owned by Kushner and by Netanyahu, he's still a human being. And maybe when he campaigned, maybe he meant that he didn't want to be a president bogged down in conflicts overseas. Maybe he meant it. Now, I know the president got very limited power that he's controlled. Maybe Trump meant that. And this alleged bust-up with Bolton, maybe it's not a bad thing. Maybe Trump is tired of Bolton. What do you make of that?
Well, he fired the wrong foreign minister, hired a worse one in Pompeo. Yeah. I mean, he was a CIA, and I mean, where do you do more damage? I guess you do more damage at either place, but CIA probably more damage than foreign ministry, than State Department in the U.S. And he fired H.R. McMaster and brought in Bolton. I mean, Bolton is the closest thing to a maniac in U.S. politics. I mean, Trump would do a wonderful thing thing. I would give him a medal if he fired both of those guys. I mean, he'd probably bring other guys pretty bad. But I think I might say something nice about the guy if he got rid of both of them. I don't know what he wants in his heart of hearts, Richie, but I do know this. He's a businessman, and he prioritizes profit-making for U.S. corporations, of course, himself. I suspect one reason he wanted to be president is maybe he thought it would do his business very, very, very well, making it more profitable than already. If it was teetering on bankruptcy, which it has a couple of times, maybe it would prevent the company from ever going bankrupt. So I think he had a profit motive in mind for wanting to be president. I know he wants a Nobel Peace Prize, which I think lies behind talks with Kim Jong-un and the North Korean leader, two summits, and meeting him in the DNC, and being the first sitting U.S. president to set foot on the North Korean territory, only for, I guess, a couple of minutes, no big deal, but he did it. I think he wants a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
Probably say, well, if Obama could do it by being a war criminal, why the heck can't I?
Brilliant.
I don't think he's going to get a Nobel Peace Prize, but I think he wants it. But he won't get a Nobel Peace Prize if he attacks Iran, so maybe that's a good reason why he won't.
Very good, Stephen. Final question. We'll wrap it up in about 45 seconds. Thanks for your time again today, StephenLendman.org. Final question for you. Israel has nuclear weapons. It doesn't acknowledge that it has, and it put whistleblowers in prison, as we know. Dreadful place. Why wouldn't Iran want a nuclear weapon? If I was the Iranian president, if I was the supreme leader, I'd be saying, yeah, let's get a nuclear weapon. And then maybe these lunatics will just leave us alone. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. It's a very good point, Richie. The only thing I do know is that the leadership says nuclear weapons are hostile to Islam. Well, I mean, anything hostile to human life that could literally wipe out, incinerate cities and kill millions of people, I mean, that should be hostile to Christianity, to Hinduism, to Judaism, to everything else. And yet Israel has nukes that have began during the Eisenhower term, where the Eisenhower people okayed a nuclear reactor for Israel, and that started them on toward developing nukes that began either had them in the late 50s or early 60s, and they probably have thermonukes now and missiles that can deliver them long distance. But it's a good point you raise about Iran. If Iran had nukes, countries would be very, very hesitant wanting to attack the country. But of course, its military is pretty strong. It can attack U.S. forces in Israel and the region. Certainly can't match U.S. military power or NATO military power. But if it's attacked, it can do a lot of damage, Richie. The country would be utterly devastated if there's a war. But it could kill a lot of U.S. people, a lot of Israelis. And that may be a reason why there won't be a war on Iran. Key for me is the fact that I think most NATO countries, with the exception of Britain, are very, very reluctant to get into a U.S. coalition for war against Iran. And if they stick to their guns, and I don't know that they will, but if they do, that's the best chance for avoiding a war on Iran.
We will speak again. I could listen to you all day, Stephen. You know I mean that when I say that. Thanks for giving us your time today. Folks, if you haven't already, bookmark Stephen's website, StephenLendman.org. It's free. You know, if you can support Stephen, do support Stephen. It's fantastic to have that resource there and share it with other people. Last of a dying breed, Stephen. Thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you, Richie. It's great being on with you. I love being on with you. You are one terrific host, and your listeners should know that.
Well, thanks. You're very kind. Thanks very much, Stephen. I'm blushing now. Thanks for your help. We'll be in touch again real soon. The great Stephen Lendman live on the line from the Windy City of Chicago. Top man is Stephen Lendman there. It's exactly, 14? It's 14 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Right. I wanted to do this. I recorded this earlier on. I'm taking my cans off now. It's not a good thing to do. You should never take your cans off. But my glasses, my spectacles are hurting my ears. They're hurting my ears today for some reason. Anyway, right. Great stuff from Stephen Lindman. I mentioned Tracy Ann Oberman, the actress who would be best known for playing Christy Watts in EastEnders. I know, and I didn't even need to be told that by the BBC. That's how sad a bastard I am. I knew. I remember her, Chrissy. Attractive woman. I think that's why I remember. Attractive lady. She's Jewish. And I understand that she made an appearance on BBC Radio 5 Live last Thursday morning, the morning after the Panorama report was broadcast by the BBC. The Panorama report that claimed that anti-Semitism was rife. Not only was it rife in the Labour Party, but that some of the young men and women who worked in dealing with complaints were abused and were harassed and ended up with mental health issues. Very, very crazy report, right? We've since learned that one or two of those featured on the programme had been indirectly exposed by Al Jazeera's The Lobby a couple of years ago. This is a scandal, which isn't a scandal because nobody's reporting on this except certain aspects of the independent media, including this particular radio show. Why isn't Jeremy Corbyn screaming from the rooftops? I would. The very next time that I was interviewed by a BBC journalist, I would go to town on them. I would go to town on them. And if the BBC comes up here with David Baddiel to interview me about anti-Semitism, I'll be asking the question in the conversation with David Baddiel. Nicely, because I'm a nice guy. Why should you come up here and ask me about it? You're representing the BBC. You've got not got a leg to stand on, would be my opening salvo, right? Right, don't give your game plan away, Rich. You know, it's obvious what I would say. So they're making these allegations. Nobody's asking for proof. Tracy Ann Oberman was on the Victoria Derbyshire show today, and she said some very strong things. She told a story about being accosted by another actor. She's an actress. An actor accosted her at a party and was saying things that were certainly bigoted. If it happened. I'm not saying it didn't for a minute. Not for a minute am I saying it didn't happen. It's just the BBC's approach to this stuff is worrying from a journalistic point of view. Here's Tracy Ann Oberman speaking to Victoria Derbyshire earlier today.
I thought these people just existed behind a Twitter sphere or social media sphere or a Facebook page. I was at a party and an actor was very drunk and he kept looking at me, he was eyeballing me. Eventually he came over and he said, I know you, you're one of that lot. You're one of that lot. Your lot's days are over. And I said, what do you mean my lot? And he went, your lot, you're trying to bring a good man down. Very aggressively, spitting in my face. And I said, a woman, a mother, an actress, a Jew. He went, there, you said it. And then he said, your North London cabal, your days are over because change is coming. And I said, as he spat at me, are you the sort of supporter that Jeremy Corbyn would like to align himself with? And he went, I know Jeremy very well, and your days are numbered. And so it was really quite intimidating and frightening to see that in real life.
If I was an actor, and I really felt like that, you know, that her lot, that the dirty Jews, are trying to bring down Jeremy Corbyn, because the Jews are not dirty, number one, and number two, the Jews are not trying to bring down Jeremy Corbyn. The Zionist lobby is trying to bring down Jeremy Corbyn, not the Jews, right? But if I felt like that, as an actor, you'd have to be suicidal as an actor to say that, wouldn't you? I would have thought, you know, it's a career-ending thing, that, isn't it? Not to mention, the woman was well within her rights to go to the police. Now, she might not have gone to the police because she might have been taken aback by what he said. I'm not for a minute saying that that didn't happen. Not for a minute, because I would be wrong to say that. I would be wrong if I said I suspected it didn't happen. I would be wrong to do that as well. That would be lousy, because I don't know. What I would do in that situation is I would point out that, fair enough, Tracy, but that's hearsay. One idiot, one dopey bastard who's out of his mind with a few drinks and decides to have a pop at you is no indication or is no proof that there is widespread across society people who hold these opinions. But that's not happening on the BBC. The BBC is just allowing this stuff to go unchallenged. Now, I must again say, I didn't hear the entire interview with Victoria Derbyshire. What I did hear, I wasn't thrilled about. Here's another Here's another segment from that interview with the Jewish actress Tracy Ann Oberman, again talking to Victoria Derbyshire about her feelings about anti-Semitism in society and in the Labour Party.
I can't believe that in 2019 I'm getting the sort of abuse that I think my family would have got in the 1920s and 30s in Germany and also in Russia.
Well, I would have interjected there and said, are you really comparing getting some abuse on Twitter when you tweet about these matters? Because when you tweet about these matters, when Jewish people tweet about this stuff, they do get some abuse on social media. You'd be stupid to say they don't, right? They do. But I would say, Tracy, are you really comparing what was said to you online, and maybe even by the drunk actor, to the things being endured by the Jews that were scapegoated in the ghettos in the 30s? Are you honestly making the comparison? Really?
It's unbelievable to me that I am called the things that I am called for being Jewish. You know, filthy Jew, dirty Jew, political Jew, Zionist Jew, lying Jew, smearing, working for a cabal. Not
a lot of the people who tweet, now this is controversial, but I'm going to say it anyway. Not all of them, because again, there are a very, very, like there's one in 100,000 dickheads. Ken O'Keefe, you know, Jewtube. The dirty Jews, they exist, but they're such a minority that they don't even matter. A lot of the tweets that are directed at people like Tracy Ann Oberman, now, this is not speculation, I know this to be true. Sometimes a Jewish person will be called a dirty, rotten Jew. And that tweet originated in Tel Aviv. It's Hasbara. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. There was a boy in school years ago. He had some sort of psychological condition, a young boy in school years ago. And he was obsessed with doing bad things. Like he would break stuff and he would play tricks and stuff. But he would always try and make it look like somebody else did. I'm not making this up. This happened in primary school. I'm not going to name the kid. But he would do stuff to blame another kid so that he could bask in the glory of being the one who discovered it. The kid was, he was crackers. Like, this is when we were like 8 years of age. He would go into the toilet in the classroom and he would piss all over the walls. This kid was barking mad, right? God love him. I think he grew up to be okay, I think, the kid. But then he would go and tell the teacher, hey, somebody's just done this in the toilet, right? Trolls working for Hasbara, for Israel, will do stuff like that. They will go on Twitter and they will accuse Jews of being dirty, filthy, and Zios and all this sort of stuff. Honestly, that's what they do. Am I saying that all of that conduct originates in Israel? No, of course not. Like I said, there are dickheads. Excuse my choice of language. Excuse the profanity. But there are arseholes. And there are a very tiny few people who believe it. But it's very hard to find them, you know? But anyway, yeah. A lot of it is Hasbara. You have to look it up to figure out what it is, to find out what it is. There you go. Thanks for your tweets today. Dr. Rima Labo, MD, who's not been on the programme for a long time, is going to be with us tomorrow. And we won't be covering old ground. We're going to be covering new ground with Rima. Don't miss that. Got a wonderful programme lined up. Programmes lined up this week. Johnny Vedmore is going to return to the Richie Allen Show. Great guy, Johnny. Again, it's been 2 or 3 years since Johnny was on. He's back on the programme. I'm hoping that Maggie Oliver, who is very, very busy, I've made contact with Maggie, the former detective, of course, will make time to come on the programme to talk about her book. And there are other guests lined up again this week. It's a packed old week on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Paul Craig Roberts returns to the Richie Allen Show after a bit of an absence as well later on this week. It's a good old week I've got lined up for you, to be sure, to be sure. Thanks to Anonymous in Western Massachusetts. Thank you for the kind words. Nice to be talking to you live. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 9:30 in the AM when I'll look through the newspapers and I will interact with you on the chat on YouTube. My YouTube channel is youtube.com/Richie Allen Show. Couldn't be simpler. Scorching in the studio. Scorching. Scorching. I can't wait to get out, to be honest. It is scorchingly warm in the studio this afternoon. Very warm in Salford and Greater Manchester. That's all I have to tell you, really. Again, thanks for interacting with me on Twitter today. I think I've read more tweets than I have of late. I am well aware of it. Cocobell, my friend, says, listening to Tracy Ann Oberman, it sounds like bullshit, says Cocobell. Yeah, I understand why you think that. We don't know if it is. Like I said, maybe people are going after her on Twitter and calling her effing Jew and dirty Jew. And maybe some of that is originating from the propaganda wing of Zionism, Hasbara. Just maybe, just maybe, just maybe, just maybe. I'm going to close out the programme with some Steve Earle. It's one of my all-time favourite tunes. This is Johnny Come Lately on the Richie Allen Show. Look after yourselves and one another. See you tomorrow. Bye. I'm a